This is an ABC podcast.
What is the most daring or absurd scam you've come across in your time researching scams? Like, what's a scam that sticks out really saliently in your memory?
Well, there are a number of good candidates, but I have to say, when I first heard about the psychologist hypnosis scam, I was kind of skeptical, right? I thought I had seen it all.
Right.
But that one was very bold.
What was that scam? I've never heard of that one.
Well, there's different versions of it, but the idea is that psychologists were getting phone calls indicating that they had missed court on a case related to their practice.
Mm.
And if they didn't pay a huge fine, they would lose their license. So it starts as kind of a normal scam, right? So there's some kind of emotional threatening information that gets the person's attention and gets them to engage. But the victim that I interviewed said it just felt like they were under hypnosis. You know, they were complying with the commands of the person, that they were in this kind of trance and they couldn't shake out of it.
This is All in the Mind. I'm Sana Qadar. Scammers are master manipulators, and they're getting better at what they do. Dr. Stacey Wood is a psychologist who's been studying scams for the past 20 years.
I'm a college professor. I run a research lab looking at the psychology of scams.
She also works as an expert witness in cases involving victims of scams.
I do see what I call the greatest hits over and over again.
Oh, yeah?
And I hate to give scammers credit, but they do innovate.
Last year in the U.S., consumers lost a record $8.8 billion to scammers. Here in Australia, consumers lost a record $2 billion to scams in 2021. And those figures are just what's reported.
Yeah, and that's the brilliance of it, you know, so about 1 in 4 of these crimes are reported.
That means there's a good chance many of you listening right now have fallen for a scam at some point, or you know someone who has. It's interesting. So while preparing for this, I was thinking of, you know, my own experiences or people I know. And there's one time about a decade ago where I nearly got scammed. And then thankfully, right at the last moment, I like picked up that this is not quite right and I shouldn't be going through with this and handing over my credit card details. But they basically, what they sort of did really effectively was play on my vanity. Professional scams, romance scams, tech scams, scams using AI voice cloning. The forms may differ, but the function remains the same. So today, we dive into the psychology of scams, how fraudsters do it, and why we fall for it. So just going back to the psychology hypnosis scam, so you said it starts off with they're told they missed a court date and so they owe a fine. How did it go from that to this person feeling like they were under hypnosis? Like, how did it escalate?
That's what I find really amazing, right? They get a person you don't know to comply. In this case, the fear of not being able to practice, not being able to make money was large enough to really activate the amygdala, really activate the fear centers of the brain, which inhibits deliberation, inhibits our ability to do analysis.
This scam was kicking around California a few years ago, and the scammers were relentless with their demands. They did everything they could to make sure the person stayed on the line.
So they were constantly just repeating the same phrases over and over again and not letting the person even go to the bathroom. So to kind of keep them in this trance-like state. They also had some techniques they used, like sound effects. The psychologist I spoke to, she said she could hear sounds in the background that sounded like a police station. So they did a lot to really leverage that credibility and authority.
Yeah, and why would, can you talk a little bit about, like, why would someone feel like they couldn't walk away? Why wouldn't you go to the bathroom? Like, how is it that it's so effective when it's over the phone that it actually keeps you hooked?
And someone you've never met.
Yeah.
It's amazing. You know, we know from social psychology that people comply with authority. And then other tactics from social psychology, like the foot in the door, you know, you get a person do like a small ask, and then they're more likely to do a bigger ask.
Did the scammers get caught in this case in the end?
Oh, no.
Wow.
No, they didn't.
And it's kind of incredible having a psychologist here fall for a scam, because I guess the idea would be you would think they would understand some of the psychology behind this and perhaps that they could evade this, but that's not the case, clearly.
Yeah, I mean, a common trait that I see in scam victims is actually overconfidence. So you believe you could engage in these situations and not be a victim. But in addition to that, so not only are they susceptible to these fear tactics like every other human, there's also additional kind of humiliation around it, right? Like keeping it quiet. Like for me, my brand is that I study the psychology of scams. It would be even more embarrassing if I was a victim of a scam.
Yeah.
Although I know I could be.
Let's talk about the scammer's playbook. Like, is there a scammer's playbook? Because it seems like there's probably some key things that they're all sort of doing to hook people in.
So I think of it as like three stages. First is they have to get your attention, right? They have to get you to engage.
Yep.
The second is they have to develop a relationship, like really, really quickly. And then the third is they manage or maintain that relationship until they've accomplished what it was they set out to do. Thinking about it in that framework, so let's talk about just that first piece.
Yeah.
Getting your attention. Generally, what works really well is scams that elicit intense emotion. So if you think about like romance scams, love. Psychologist scam, fear. Investment scams, reward. So there's very positive scams, you know, that are kind of going for those emotions, and also ones that are using fear and anxiety.
For the second part of the process, developing a relationship, Dr. Wood says scammers tend to align themselves with some sort of authority. So, like in the case of the psychologist hypnosis scam, it was law enforcement. But it can also be a corporation or influencer.
Some brand that consumers trust. So you're more open to having a relationship.
Right.
And some other scams like romance scam or the psychologist scam, they also pretty early on try to change the power dynamic so they're in control.
Then for the third part, maintaining the relationship, this is how scammers do it.
The tactics that I see is like gaslighting. So it develops this sort of very emotional and alternating, threatening and helpful relationship. They also surround people with attention because they're trying to isolate the person. So you don't go over and ask anyone if they believe it's credible.
How long does it typically take for a victim to realize they're a victim, they've been had?
You know, it really does depend. I mean, you could have like a short scam, like the psychologist one really was just a day.
Oh, wow.
But the person was on the phone for hours. But the person I interviewed, as soon as their husband came home and was like, what are you doing? They were able to kind of break them out of it.
Oh, my goodness. Right.
I've had romance scams, 18 months?
Wow.
In terms of the aftermath, it's pretty ugly. You know, they blame themselves. Mm-hmm. It's a very intimate crime. So I see a combination of trauma symptoms and mood symptoms in many of the people that I talk to.
And is it sort of like apart from the psychologist whose husband came home and snapped her out of it, you know, does it typically take like several asks for money before someone is like, hang on, what's going on here? Is that sort of how it builds?
Unfortunately, no. I mean, I think once people are giving money, they've bought in that the ask is credible.
Right.
So generally, it does take some intervention from some other source.
What motivates scammers to do this? Like, do they all typically have antisocial personality disorders? Or like, what's going on with their own psychology?
No, that's a really interesting question. I kind of categorize them in some different groups. Mm-hmm. And one group probably does fit that, you know, psychopathic, narcissistic kind of person. You know, we can think of someone like a Bernie Madoff, who carried on a Ponzi scheme for years, knowing that it was damaging. And I don't know for sure, you know, if he was a psychopath or narcissist, but these people are fascinating.
Yeah.
But they're unusual. For most of these kind of scams we're talking about, it's like boiler room, teams of people, it's a job. where they go to work and they get rewarded based on how much money they're bringing in. And some of them, I think, are very aware that what they're doing is criminal and others are less aware.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe that's not as interesting, but that's much more common.
Right. Have you ever actually met a scammer?
Yeah.
You have?
Yeah, I have. It's interesting. You know, I do forensic psychology work, and sometimes I get hired by the defense to do an assessment of the scammer for court processes. So I have met more than my share.
And what are these people like that you've come across?
Most of them are opportunists. You know, they found something that worked in terms of generating easy money, and they were morally flexible.
Mm-hmm.
And willing to do it and weren't thinking at all about the harm that it caused to their victims or the fact that they probably were going to get caught. They're not planners.
Mm.
So, but they're not dumb. You know, I would say most were like college educated. The people that I've interviewed have been college educated people.
Wow. And are they mostly men?
All men, I think, so far that I've interviewed in my sample.
Do they have any remorse?
Not really.
Have scams always existed? Like from the moment we started living in groups and needing resources and each other, have we always duped each other?
Probably. Yeah. I'm still amazed that some scams survive today, like the Nigerian prince.
Is that still going around?
Yeah.
Gosh.
They changed the demographics and some of the details, and now it's crypto.
But is it still a Nigerian
prince? It's not a super popular one, but it is.
And so people are still, presumably falling for these, even though they've been around for years.
Yeah, I mean, and think about catfishing. Like, there's podcasts about it, right? There's shows about it. There's video games about it, right? Most people are aware it's a phenomenon that can happen. But romance scams are one of the most common scams right now and have increased just a huge amount in the last couple of years.
Yeah, it feels like scams are sort of exploding at the moment. Like there's romance scams, like you said, there's fake websites for legitimate businesses, there's text scams. Like there's this really ubiquitous text scam going around Australia right now where you get a message from an unknown number and it says, "Hi, Mum, I lost or broke my phone. This is my new number." And then invariably, you know, if you text back, they ask for money because they need to get a new phone or they've lost their wallet too. And it just seems nonstop, like so many people are getting them so frequently. And yeah, I just wonder, are first of all, scams exploding at the moment? Or does it just seem like that? And if so, why?
Yeah, no, that's a good one. I think there's different factors. And I think about this a lot because you're right. The data absolutely backs up your observation that scams have exploded. And, you know, when I started doing research in this area almost 20 years ago, I was really focusing on elderly people. You know, it seemed to be something that mostly happened to older people and, you know, was devastating. But since 2015, 2016, it really has changed.
Right.
So social media is one reason. Social media is the most common way to be scammed now. Facebook and Instagram, I think, are the most common where it starts. Also shopping, you know, fake products, but in terms of like a romance scam. And these victims are generally under 40. So one reason it's increased so much is the scammers have figured out how to approach other demographics. It's very cheap. It's very hard to prosecute a scam that was perpetrated on social media if the person was out of your country.
Mm-hmm.
And what's great about it, if you're a scammer, is think of all the information you can get.
Mm.
Like if I'm just cold calling you, I might know like your area code. I might be able to assume a few things about you.
Mm.
If I'm on social media where there's like targeted ads, you know, you can learn so much about a person, you know, their demographics, their interests, hobbies, friends. So a lot of these things could start as like an innocent friend request. And so that's a gold mine. If your goal, again, remember, is to engage and develop a relationship, you know, knowing a lot about them is helpful.
This is precisely how scammers developed what Dr. Wood calls the grandparent scam.
This actually happened to my father. So my father got a call and the person on the other side says, "Hi, this is the police in Reno, Nevada. And we have your son here or your grandson here in jail." And then they put someone on the line that's like, you know, Grandpa, I'm really sorry. I screwed up. Don't tell Dad.
Mm.
And then it goes back to the sergeant. And the person sounded enough. It was actually, they pretended to be my brother in that case, but it's usually a grandson. Yeah, enough like them that my father just wasn't sure. And it was very fast. And again, he was startled. And, you know, my dad was very elderly. He like didn't text. So he didn't think, I'll just text him and see if this is legit.
Okay, right.
You know, to be fair, it wouldn't be a horrible shock if one of my brothers was in jail overnight. You know, it wasn't completely uncredible.
Okay.
And one of my brothers travels a lot. So it was like credible enough that my father stayed on the line.
Wow.
And when he was instructed to like wire from Western Union $5,000, my father's like,
okay.
But jail accepts, yeah. But that's the scam. And again, it was incredibly effective. So it was just ubiquitous.
Wow.
Because it used knowledge from social media to learn about family structures, to learn who was traveling, and capitalize on the fact that more elderly people were not in constant contact with all of their offspring,
right?
They weren't texting, Instagramming.
And there's a scary new development in this type of scam. Fraudsters are starting to use artificial intelligence to impersonate family members way more effectively. So if they can get a hold of just a few short audio samples of someone, something easily collected from many social media posts, they can actually clone a voice and have it pose as a distressed loved one in need of cash. It's pretty hard to evade something like this, but the US Federal Trade Commission suggests if you get a call from a family member that's like this, don't trust it at face value. Ring the person who's supposedly contacted you directly on a number you know is theirs. And if you can't reach them, try contacting their friends or another family member first. Is it possible to sort of lump the kinds of scams we're seeing today in certain categories? Like, it seems to me like there's some scams that are hyper-targeted, like the romance scams you're talking about, some of these social media scams. Then there's sort of these scams that are just giant fishing nets that are kind of trying to trap people, like the hi mum tech scams. Is there a way to sort of lump the various scams into particular baskets?
In the US, the FTC does have like different categories of scams. It's a little different than what you're talking about, like government scams, like the IRS is calling you, romance scams, investment scams. But in terms of the way you're thinking about it, I think is more interesting, right? Like there's this group of people that, you know, they're just fishing for data.
Yeah.
And so one thing we learned in our lab, and other people have found this, that you know how there's always these like terrible spelling mistakes?
Yeah. Yes.
It's kind of funny, right? You're like, this is so obvious.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it might be a feature, not a bug.
Oh, they're doing that on purpose.
I think it was an accident when it started, but they're looking for people that aren't that attentive.
Right. Okay. So people who aren't noticing the spelling mistakes aren't going to notice it's a fake coming through.
Right. The URL is not from their place of work.
Mm. Yeah, it's interesting to think about the various types, because I'll go back to the hi mum scam, the texts that are being sent to phones across Australia. It just, to me, it feels like a very blunt, very stupid kind of approach, but it must, you know, certainly trap some people. Because, I got one last week, and my kids too, and I'm like, this is just completely ridiculous.
So that one's just a novel. They're playing a novelty. So now it seems ridiculous. The first few days it came out, they probably got 1-3% of people to respond.
Right.
And that's not bad. Like a good scam is like 2-5% of people respond.
Oh, wow. In that case, if 2-5% is all you need, it doesn't matter that if half the phones you're sending to are to a father rather than a mom or a person who doesn't have kids at all, you'll just hit someone.
Yeah, right. And, you know, and it's all automated, you know, on their end. It's not like a real person sending the text. So it's easy to do that. Exactly. Yeah. It's a fire hose approach.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
It's not great psychology, right? They're just like, this might work.
Just throwing stuff against a wall and seeing what sticks.
Yeah.
And so can you talk about what makes a target? Like all of us are vulnerable to someone with nefarious intent, right? Or is there a class / intelligence / personality element to who makes a good target?
I wish I could tell you more specifically than I'm going to. And there definitely are some traits. that do seem to be more consistently related to victimization, but they're more state, like loneliness, depression. In older people, even very mild cognitive changes is a huge risk factor. Another finding is that if you've had a major life event in the last 2 years, you're at much higher risk. Mm. So, you know, divorce, death, and retirement, becoming a mother, empty nest, anything like that is increasing risk, which is interesting.
And is that because you're just more emotionally vulnerable and raw in the time after that, that makes you potentially more susceptible to a scam?
Yeah, I think it's disruptive, you know, so you probably have fewer cognitive resources for dealing with life. And all of the other, you know, like loneliness and depression, when you're experiencing those negative states, you're motivated to change that. So maybe playing the lottery is a fun way to potentially shift that mood. Kind of more generally, though, there's some evidence that less educated people are more likely to fall for things like the sweepstakes scams.
Right.
You may already be a winner. You just need to send me money. Or like the Nigerian prince. But more educated people are falling for things like high-stakes scams, crypto scams, investments, because they're in that world.
Yeah.
And again, they're a little overconfident because they've been successful investing in the past.
So for people listening who are wondering about their own vulnerabilities to scammers, how should we think about our vulnerability and how should we assess where our weaknesses might lie?
My collaborator and I are looking at this issue right now. And what we believe is true is that humans just have a blind spot, you know? And so when you're in that emotional state, if they're successful in engaging you, you're vulnerable. Mm. But you can't see it if you're not in that state. None of us want to believe we can be that person, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that's the problem. So I think the solution is another person helping you when you are in that state.
Right. So there's no real way to safeguard ourselves against potentially being scammed.
Well, I don't want to be that pessimistic. You know, of course, you know, being, you know, a little more private with your data, not reacting to things right away.
Sure.
You know, to start, you could think about building resilience. Like if you're feeling lonely or have been depressed, you know, addressing those. Again, I think just asking another person is the best thing you can do because it engages deliberative reasoning.
Mm.
These are often private behaviors, right? You're chatting with someone you met on a, you know, on Facebook. Often you're not sharing that with your friends and family.
Yeah. Have you ever been scammed yourself?
You know, not in any spectacular way. I've had like double billing.
Oh, right.
So like you look at your credit card and you're like, wait a second.
Right.
And that's a good scam for me because I'm, you know, working mom, I'm busy and I don't always have time to go back and check that.
Right. It's interesting. So while preparing for this, I was thinking of, you know, my own experiences or people I know. And there's one time about a decade ago where I nearly got scammed. And then thankfully, right at the last moment, I like kind of picked up that this is not quite right and I shouldn't be going through with this and handing over my credit card details. But they basically, what they sort of did really effectively was play on my vanity. So I was a little bit early in my journalism career at that time, and I think it started with an email from someone claiming to be from Who's Who, like that directory of, you know, notable people, where I was like, I think I've heard of that thing. I think that sounds important. Interesting. I'll see what this is about. So I must have given them my number because after that initial email, there was a phone call. And I remember being on this phone call and the person talking about, you know, why they wanted to include me and asking me about my career and why I love journalism and sort of having me do this little spiel of passion. And now thinking back, I just like cringe and it's so embarrassing. But I was like, yeah, I love what I do and this and that. And anyways, I was answering their questions and going along. And so then it got to the point where they're like, well, look, we'll include you in our next Who's Who. It's going to cost this much. And what we're going to do for you is we're going to send out a press release to announce your inclusion. And like at that point, in my head, my journalist brain, thank God, finally switched on. And I was like, I know how press releases work. Who is going to give a flying hoot that I have been included in a Who's Who directory? Where are they sending this press release and who's going to care? And so from then I started to feel like this ain't right. And then I was like, you know what? I think I need some time to think about it. And that's when they were like, no, this is only, you have to stay on the line now. We have to do it now. It's a one-time offer kind of thing. And from there I was like, oh, Sana, get off the line right
now. Good for you. But you know, what made that scam potentially so effective is they did target you.
Yeah.
As someone who might be reasonably approached for such a volume. And, you know, again, they're evoking emotion. They're trying to get you into this, like, you know, positive emotional state by asking certain types of questions. And then you mentioned the urgency, which I didn't bring up as a, you know, part of the classic tactics of scammers. So that's always, always there. Mm. You know, like, it's a marketing technique, but also scammers also, like, really try to evoke a scarcity.
Right. Yeah.
Only 3 seats left.
Yes.
You know, book now.
Yeah, totally.
But it works.
Anything else you can sort of glean out of what they were trying to do with that scam and why it was almost effective and then why it wasn't, maybe?
Well, just because you did have some expertise.
Right.
Someone like me might have been like, oh, that sounds great.
That press release is going to be the most interesting thing any journalist sees that day. Yeah, I mean, since then, I don't, not that I know of, I haven't fallen for anything, but, you know, who's to say what happens in the future, I guess, based on our chats today.
Well, I think even the language we use would say fall for it, right? Like we're always putting it on the victim.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure what a better phrase would be, but I have been thinking about that. Like, so it's kind of setting up the person to feel foolish.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I definitely felt foolish afterwards. I still do. I'm embarrassed sharing that now.
Yeah. But it was helpful that you did. Right. I mean, and now I'm sure many other people were targeted by that.
Yeah. Right.
And that's the brilliance of it, you know, so about 1 in 4 of these crimes are reported.
1 in 4.
That might be even higher than you thought. Used to be 1 in 10. It's getting a little better.
Wow. And so, yeah, to me, that sounds shockingly low, but much better than 1 in 10. What's changing to make people more willing to come forward with this kind of thing?
I have to say, I think it's because younger people are getting scammed. So if you're an older person and you're scammed, there's stereotypes about cognitive changes as people age. So you might be doubly embarrassed and fearful of disclosing that this happened.
Right.
Whereas younger people, I don't think feel that way. I think they're expecting it. There's a lot of interest in scammers, you know, and like Netflix shows about different scammers. So maybe that'll destigmatize it a bit.
Yeah.
So they might feel some shame, but also anger. And anger can be motivating.
Okay, if you had a final piece of main advice you'd give to someone listening about what they should or shouldn't do if they fall for a scam, what would that be?
The individual human is vulnerable because, you know, we have different mood states across different days.
Mm.
So I think just accepting that you really could be scammed and giving yourself, you know, take a beat before investing, turning over your credit card, clicking on that link.
Yep.
Not sure there's much else we could do.
No, that's good advice. Perfect. That's Dr. Stacey Wood, professor of psychology at Scripps College in California and forensic neuropsychologist. That's it for All in the Mind this week. Thanks to producer Rose Kerr and sound engineer Isabella Tropiano. I'm Sana Qajar. Thanks for listening. I'll catch you next time.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.